welcome to MGO Podcast 9.3, which is mostly about Florida or Tennessee, and I'm only kind of half joking about that.
And you're excited for
what?
Given what transpired.
Just nothing.
That was out of nowhere.
Just nothing. Just you looking at me.
Yeah, it's a very visual podcast.
We got it out of the way real quick.
We did.
Hey-O Ace is just...
I wasn't ready for that much enthusiasm.
Well...
After yesterday.
You know who also wasn't ready?
Tennessee.
Also Florida.
That too.
So we usually talk about the Michigan game.
But my God.
But
we have to.
We're just... Wait, first let's talk about our sponsors. We'd like to thank Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, Human Element, Lantana Hummus, Michigan Law Grad, Deo Bookkeeping, and Ann Arbor Elder Law. We are, of course, taping this at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, in the Michigan Room, one of their 13 conference rooms, one for every team in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about some teams not in the Big Ten. I hope everybody watching this saw the end of that. There's nothing else on at the time. So.
Yeah, and it was really the only competitive game going.
Yeah, and my God.
And competitive, I don't know if that's the right word for it necessarily, but you know, it was close.
So if you didn't see this, it's 20-20 at the end of the game.
Oh my God.
I guess it's a typical Florida-Tennessee game at this point, right?
Yeah, just Tennessee, nothing going offensively for either team.
Tennessee has a running back that's going off.
John Kelly from Oak Park.
Yeah. I mean, I wish Harbaugh had more than like 2 weeks to recruit that
game. Yeah, for real.
And then like their quarterback is awful and terrible and awfully terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then Florida is Florida.
Yeah, we saw up close what that looks like.
It was good to see a confirmation of my belief that the three tech they have is awesome.
Yeah, really dang good.
He was killing it in that game. I'm like, all right, so I feel better about Michigan's right side not doing so hot against him.
Mm-hmm.
It's 20-20 at the end of the game. There's a minute left. They've got two timeouts. Florida does. They've got the ball. They get the ball to a third and like a foot. Clock's running.
And running.
And running.
And running.
And, like, if you watch the Minnesota game from Harbaugh's first year, it was kind of that level of clock malfeasance.
Yeah. So, I mean, they set that up with a three-yard pass.
Yeah, so they finally run the ball, get a first down, call timeout, 9 seconds left on the clock, and they're at, like, their own 40. So this is Hail Mary time, right?
Yeah, they're on their own 37.
And
9 seconds left.
Tennessee calls cover two.
Yeah.
They called cover two.
Yeah. And then
not even like cover three.
No, cover two. Two deep safeties.
Cover two.
The cornerback drops off of Florida's most dangerous receiver, who runs by the safety as the ball's in the air.
And
catches it on the run.
To be fair, this was like a 66-yard...
Oh, I mean, this was an absolute cannon shot for Felipe Franks.
This is why Franks was like,
but you have one job in that situation, and it is to not let anybody get behind you.
Who calls cover two?
Tennessee.
If you call a man coverage with like a free safety, that guy's bracketed. If you call two man free, like that, then that guy's like super bracketed. If you call cover three, you've got a better shot at that.
Yeah, or you know, prevent, you know, maybe just drop everybody back.
I'm just listing all the defenses.
That would have been preferable.
Prevent is one of them.
It's literally any, like, at least blitz him, maybe you'll throw him off. Like, don't let him set up to throw it 70 yards in the air.
Well, they chased him out of the pocket. It was actually a pretty great
throw.
They
did do that, but man. It was just so dumb.
Just one of those moments where, like, you know, you see him loading up to throw, and you're just like, no way. No. And then the ball's arcing, and the camera's panning, and you're like, all right, well, this is going to be 75, like, the entire scholarship roster of Tennessee
mm-hmm.
is going to be surrounding, like, two Florida guys. And then, like, oh, there's one, and he's
running.
He's behind free. That guy.
He threw his hand up like 20 yards away from the end zone.
I just cannot believe it.
It called cover two. SEC! That's the first ever SEC.
Yes.
Well deserved.
Absolutely, after that game. My God. Yeah, but this game was also 6-3 after the third quarter.
Yeah.
We should mention that, too. Yeah. Like, this was just an absolutely hideous football game throughout.
Yeah, and then
all of just the fourth quarter just explodes.
Well, Florida has, like, the worst rule in football comeback to bite them, because they have a guy going in who, like, fumbles on the one-yard line.
That was an incredible job by that Tennessee defensive
back. I know, it's still like, terrible.
It's an awful rule. It was an amazing play.
It is... Oh.
But it was so fitting for that moment in the game where it's like, oh, Florida might punt it away. Oh, never mind. No, they're not. That would happen.
So the terrible thing about beating Florida in the first game of the year is now I'm like kind of a Florida fan by proxy.
Yeah, it's awful. It's horrible.
And so like
every second that clock's ticking down, I'm sitting there on the couch just like, why is this my lot in life?
Like Spencer like writes these really impassioned things, like, I used to love football and now I hate it. And like I was there, man.
Yeah, we have very much been there.
We know exactly how he feels, down to the completely inept offense that will never ever get better.
Yes.
And like now I have to sign up. Like now I'm rooting for a Brady Hoke team again. Except like Brady Hoke is really sensitive about sharks.
Yeah. At least Brady Hoke was relatively likable. Jim McElwain has none of the good qualities.
He's selling sauce.
He is. I have Spencer's article open in a tab to read when I just have a few minutes to read.
He's
really
selling
enjoy
barbecue
it.
Sauce. And his wife calls herself Blondie. Which, whoa!
Okay.
Also, the sauce is called Mambo 3 because they have three children. Okay. And apparently they call their mom Mambo.
Okay.
So, it's more embarrassing than having sex with a shark, I think.
Yeah, coming up with a sauce that makes me immediately think of Lou Bega? That's not ideal.
No, like Mambo. Oh my god, is that why? Is that what it is?
God, I hope not.
Is it a Lou Bega reference?
It probably is. They're going for five kids, I guarantee it. When they have two more, we'll have confirmation. They're going for Mambo 5.
It's a Lou Bega reference.
It is.
Oh my god.
So Jim McElwain, have we confirmed worst person on earth here?
No, he's not the worst person on earth. Whoa.
Not worst person, just the one we just...
No, liked. I mean, like, he's... I mean...
I know, there's plenty of guys.
He's not, like, a bad dude. He's just very...
No, unlikable and...
He is unlikable.
And, like, relatively inept at the thing he's being paid a lot of money to do.
Yeah, but he's not a bad dude. He's just a weird dude. And, like, weird in a... Like, a bad Norm MacDonald way, not a good Norm MacDonald
way.
Yeah.
Mambo. Kidding me.
Alright. Are we going to do an entire segment on this?
I mean, we could.
We
could start imagining what it's like for Jim McElwain if he did like a stand-up set in Iowa and how that would go.
Alright.
We may have strayed too far here, but I'm having fun.
Yeah. Well, that's a good lead to the offense.
God damn it, it is.
So I hope you enjoyed that part.
I was having fun.
And now we do have to talk about Michigan's offense, which got into the red zone a lot.
Yeah, they did.
And like this, of course, like,
hey, 4-for-4 in the red zone.
More
like, two thumbs up there.
Like 2 days after, I'm like, nah, these aren't red zone problems. I still don't think they're red zone problems, and this I'm going to read a Zach Shaw tweet now, who's tweeting out various statistics that Michigan has accumulated in the first 3 weeks of the season. It's not a happy tweet. Michigan is 98th in completion percentage, 99th in sacks allowed, 102nd in third down offense, and 87th in penalties.
That's not great.
No, and it's not like a red zone issue. It's just they kind of suck on offense issue.
Yeah, it's a full field. And those things do tend to get magnified when you get down into the short area when you have less room to operate a little bit.
I guess. Like, I think the one thing that seems like a clear red zone issue is the fact that Wilton Spate can't throw a fade inbounds.
Yes, that was quite apparent. And that's, you know, like, kind of the one thing you got to do with that throw is keep it in bounds.
Yeah, like, at what point does John O'Korn red zone quarterback make sense? Okay, he can throw a fade. It's like, maybe the one thing he can throw.
We have seen that. We might be telegraphing things a bit.
We might want to wait on the status of Tariq Black, but...
Well, yeah. And the other thing that bugs me about those is they're throwing them to Crawford.
Yeah.
And Crawford's 6'1", 6'4".
Meanwhile, they have an Ent yes! that they can throw to.
Who looks really
they,
good.
They have Tariq Black.
Yeah, well,
they
we'll
have,
see.
Maybe. They had him in this game.
But, so the red zone stuff, I just don't see it as a... Like Texas Tech might have a red zone issue because of the way their offense is constructed. I don't think Michigan has a red zone issue. I just think they have a sucky offense issue.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't get to 300 yards against the Air Force is indicative.
Indeed. They're just off.
Although they did, so we talked about this kind of leading up, is that Air Force is a completely go-for-broke defense.
Yeah.
And Michigan did break them twice. So Isaac had two touchdowns. One comes back because he was out by... a millimeter,
mm-hmm.
and that was the correct call. But
yes,
it was close to being a very long touchdown, and then the second one comes back with the worst holding call.
Cole Crawford just barrels over a dude standing in front of him, and somehow that's a hold.
Yeah, and like he might have like grabbed a jersey or something for a brief period, but one in the chest plate.
Yeah,
and two, like his momentum isn't like he's pulling the guy back; he just runs him over.
Yeah,
and like. I
Kakoa Crawford could have put his arms behind his back, and that play would have turned out exactly the same.
Well, maybe
on contact.
Yeah, so just kind of weird to run around doing like that.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a strange thing to do, but no holding call.
So, you know, if those plays go a little bit different, I think people are a little bit less panicky this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it was looming over the game that didn't have an offensive touchdown until garbage time, and they really could have had two quite easily.
Yeah, and they had a couple other opportunities that they weren't able to connect on. So I don't think it's quite that bad, but I do have to say that I've been kind of a poptimist about Golden Spate, and that is starting to fade. Like, I'm not going to get off the bandwagon and be like, all right, we need to put in a new quarterback. But I like this is the third straight game where he looks between iffy and outright bad. And like his throwing in the previous game was acceptable.
Yeah.
His throwing in the Florida game was acceptable, but he has really big mistakes in those first two games. And here he didn't have a really big mistake.
Well, he could have. He had one bad read that I think is first one of the year.
Yes.
Where if the Air Force defensive back just turns around, he's got a gift.
Are you talking about the one where Black just drops it?
Yeah, where it's, yeah.
That was like the back shoulder corner that Jeremy Clark got victimized on that one time.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's not a good throw. So, yeah, no. You're right. He almost had one huge mistake in this game as well. And then he's just... like throwing the fades out of bounds,
yeah,
constantly. It's really getting to me.
Yeah, because especially with this receiving corps, that's like one thing that you think would be a strength. It could help offset some of the red zone issues that they've had so far.
I mean, and you got to give your guys at least a chance,
yeah,
right?
And then those are just becoming functional non downs because he's just chucking it out of bounds.
That's, yeah, like if you
they're just wasted plays right now.
If you leave it short, maybe you get a flag, maybe you get a pass break, and maybe a touchdown. If you put it 3 yards out of bounds. Like, well, I mean, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't wildly discouraged by this game. He did have a couple instances where his receivers didn't help him out, notably the Crawford drop.
Well, the Crawford drop, and also there on the first, I think Michigan's first play from scrimmage, he lofts the ball up there and he does give his receiver a chance. It's actually a pretty good back shoulder throw.
Yeah.
And Crawford at first really does not understand this or react to it very well. It's kind of a Stoneham-esque downfield pass, and then he does get interfered with without a call.
Yeah,
but I didn't think that was.
But he did not track it well.
No, and you know, that's one of those things where if you have a good receiver and that's a catch, then everybody's like, "Oh, great throw by the quarterback!" And then
yeah, and that does. I mean, I expected them to take more just straight up deep shots in this game, and one of the limiting factors there was that first of all they weren't breaking open when they were getting downfield that often, and I think also with such a young receiver core and where Crawford, who hasn't been very reliable, is the number one guy, I don't know if the trust level's there for them to dial those plays up that often, and that does limit what you can do a bit. I still think Spate's been off in a way that's quite disconcerting at this point.
Yeah,
especially since he's not. Like, when you saw where he was at last year before the injury, you're kind of expecting this year for him to not only iron out out some mistakes, but start kind of making some things happen on his own. And that's not, he's not kind of
doing that.
Yeah. He's not, yeah, it's just the, he's not making play. I was trying to find a way to say he's not making plays. But, yeah, he's not really doing it right now. The little toss in the red zone was kind of,
well,
that was frustrating because at that point I'm just like, man, you are like 250 pounds and that's an Air Force defensive back and you've got momentum a couple yards away from the end zone. So instead of trying to cutesy little pop,
he was at the 10.
But that guy's waiting at the goal line. He's got a receiver there that he has to stay somewhat in touch with.
So I think the problem there was again Crawford.
Crawford's got to clear out.
Or he's got to go
It's a bad scramble. Yeah, I mean, he's got to go to the back corner.
Yeah, go to the back
corner. He didn't give him room. But Spate's weird indecision there.
It's because his receiver is making a terrible decision.
That's fair.
The thing is, Crawford's not even in the end zone. He's at, like, the 4.
Yeah, I was just hoping Spate would run in there and be like, I'm big, and lower his shoulder.
I still think that's 3 yards or 4 yards. Like, I thought that his decision...
The pop pass was just, I don't know.
I mean, that really didn't bother me because the situation was... Like, you're not getting a touchdown this way or the other way. And the awkwardness of the pass, I guess, is not
ideal. Yeah, I mean, that's
ideal.
Not... Yeah.
But I place way more of that, again, on Crawford. And I think, you know, I am coming down off my Spate optimism. But also I think that I might have underestimated, like, the loss of the wide receiver core.
Yeah, just the importance of having... I mean, first of all, NFL caliber players at 3 spots out there, but also just the experience level.
Tight end seems fine.
Yes, tight end does seem perfectly fine. They're doing quite well there, but something's missing on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, like, and Crawford is the guy who is making the most obvious mistakes, and he's the sophomore.
Yeah,
like that's a problem.
And it's also frustrating because he's their best blocker on the edge too. So there's a reason you want him out there, especially when they're running all this crack sweep stuff and whatever. But he's not really justifying being out there as a receiver very much right now.
Yeah, and in this game there were a ton of throws where when Spate did get time, he couldn't find anyone.
Yeah,
and he took off, and people were telling me that they had the D-minus director again this week. Which is, I mean, they were on Big Ten Network.
So
every director is a Port Vision director on the Big Ten Network, unfortunately. And, I didn't see guys running open that Spate wasn't finding.
No, there were a few times where I started letting my eyes wander downfield when he was hanging back in the pocket. And it did not look like he had a lot to throw at.
I mean... There were a couple obvious misreads, like on the black throw you referenced, like he had Isaac open
for a dump off.
But, like, he had a lot of time, and you're watching him, and he's going from one read to another read to another read. And far too often, he didn't have anything. And at some point, like, he's got to just let it rip downfield, I think, even if the guys aren't open. Just because, like, yeah, it might be an interception 40 yards downfield, but okay.
Yeah, that's just an arm punt.
Yeah, it's an arm punt. It's fine. So it's, I don't know. The problem with this is, like, I'm not going to get replays of any of this. I didn't get replays of anything last week.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really tough to tell how much of this is Spate and how much of this is the fact that his guys aren't getting open. I mean, there was a weird absence of Grant Perry in this game.
It really was.
And he is getting open. I refuse to believe that he's not getting open against Air Force. So, like, why was he not more... a part of the game plan. Same with Gentry. Gentry had a couple of catches, looked very, very good, had some blocks, looks like he's emerging.
Yeah, he's blocking guys on the edge pretty good. I mean, they're still mostly having him block small guys, but he's handling that quite well.
Well, Air Force doesn't give you any.
That's true. They do not throw big dudes out there, but his edge blocking has been a real pleasant surprise.
So, you just want to hit him over the middle, hit Gentry over the middle and try to, I don't know, mitigate the fact that these outside receivers apparently aren't getting the job done right now.
Yeah. I also thought the play calling was a little conservative at times. I really expected them to take more shots. And they've got these tight ends. They've got these safeties playing super aggressive. I just expected some shots up the seam. And
I was expecting more like max protect. Let's just get a guy one-on-one against Air Force if it's back and see what happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned before the game that I thought Michigan would have its best success in kind of, like, extreme situations. And they didn't really try that very much. Like, there was a little bit of five wide. There was a little bit of, like, goal line stuff that was actually moderately effective.
Yeah, but they didn't stick with it, really.
No, and they never, like, tried to batter them with, like, three tight ends and then send Gentry or Eubanks down the seam against a guy who was biting on play action.
Yeah, there was, like, an odd absence of Ty Wheatley Jr. sightings.
Well, he was out with injury, I think. So...
That explains it.
I don't think he dressed.
Yeah.
Or he did dress, but he wasn't warming up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And maybe that was part of them not going heavy, but I mean, I feel like they've got enough tight ends to throw out.
Like, what's heavy against Air Force?
That's true.
Like, you don't need Wheatley to blow guys off the ball if you've got McCune and Gentry and et cetera.
Yeah.
I guess et cetera is Eubanks.
Bunting.
Bundy.
He's still alive. He got out there late.
Yeah, he's apparently been passed.
He's dropped down that depth chart.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know exactly what I'm going to see in the UFR when I do it. I mean, Harbaugh did fess up to some RPS minuses in the press conference.
Yeah, both him and Spate were very complimentary of Air Force's ability to disguise coverages and blitzes.
When all your guys are the same size, you know.
That's true. It does make it difficult to figure out who's supposed to be running at you.
Yeah.
And they did have that one third down stop at the goal line.
Right, yeah.
They showed the blitz late. Spate never saw it to check out of it, and Ty Isaac got.
No, yeah. As that snap was getting off, I was watching that guy like kind of come down from the side.
It's like, ooh, he's... Yep. Exactly what I thought was going to happen is
they got us.
Yeah,
they did get us.
So I mean, that is something that should be taken into account when talking about this game. Is Air Force is very well coached at the very least. They do execute that system well.
Yes, not only an academy team, but the best academy team.
Yes, by some distance. That does not excuse Michigan's inability to really consistently move the ball through the air, but. I don't think we need to go full-blown panic on this because Air Force, I mean, they can be uneven. People keep bringing up that they lost to Hawaii last year. That did happen. But they can be a tricky team.
Well, I mean, we'll see. This isn't quite as like a non-data point as the defense kind of is.
Yeah.
But it is a little bit of a – we're facing basically 11 rabid squirrels. This is a kind of defense that Michigan probably isn't going to see the rest of the year just because it's such a gambling outfit.
Yeah, to only hit two passes longer than 25 yards against a team that plays like that is frustrating.
Yeah, they did have the two long runs that they didn't quite get.
Yes.
A couple more. I mean, three because Higdon
at the end there. He did.
They're really good at the cosmetic touchdown.
Yeah, they can do that. Save the face.
This is the third straight game that the cosmetic touchdown has arrived, twice from the defense, of course.
Yeah, no, it was nice to come out of that game with an offensive touchdown. It was going to be a little frustrating if they didn't have the one.
Yeah,
but it was quite cosmetic.
Yeah, but you know, cosmetic is good sometimes.
Air Force is still trying.
It's better.
Those guys don't lollygag.
It's better to have a cosmetic touchdown to like win by 16 instead of a cosmetic touchdown to cut it to say I don't know 6 and then suddenly 9 when Jabril Peppers returns your extra point attempt.
So we still got that dignity.
So we've got that going for us.
Oh man, yeah.
I mean.
This is the one you walk away from going, it wins a win.
Yeah.
Just because there isn't much else to say.
But until further notice, I am no longer a poptimist about the passing game here.
I mean...
Too many protection breakdowns, Spate's wobbly, and the receivers really aren't helping him out.
Yeah, I'd have more optimism if Spate wasn't wobbly because there are obvious explanations with the youth of the receivers and the youth of the right side of the line, but with Spate being this off, it's hard to be as optimistic that things are going to come together.
Yeah, and Grant Perry should have had like 50 catches in this game, and that's the thing that really kind of leaps off the page to me, where it's like, man, the Air Force boys are checking that guy? Like, that probably wasn't happening.
So yeah.
Like, if he's on the field and he's not open, that's one thing, but I don't think that was what was happening.
Yeah, no, the approach was strange in this game.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we get to shorten our depressing offensive segment because we talked about Florida, Tennessee. I feel that this was a good use of time.
Yes, we made solid time management decisions here. All right. Like, say, Jim McElwain.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693. If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, and MLS number 116-1358.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Thank you for being brave.
Oh, yeah. So we started from the bottom, now we're here, girl. Oh, yeah. This is my butt right here. Ooh. If I need everybody,
I need everyone.
No, 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 no.
Ace, what's our Lantana hummus flavor of the day?
We have some spicy yellow lentil with a little sunflower seeds and apricots on it.
See, this is... I've actually already had this quite frequently. I put it on sandwiches and it's good.
Yeah, I mean...
It has a sweetness and piquancy.
Yeah, a little bite to it.
Yeah, and it's also very tasty.
And it's not made out of kittens.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew 100%.
It's a very professional podcast, Brian. We have to mention the lack of kittens.
We've gotten some pushback from marketing directors about, like, can we not talk about the kittens? And Ace, talk about the kittens!
Going off the rails here.
I mean, it's not made of kittens. Let's...
Yeah, it's made of chickpeas.
Yes.
As hummus should be.
Unlike every other hummus.
Yep.
Which is just kitten murder. And not as good anyway. Because it's just, you're just eating the souls.
Yeah, they don't have these sunflower seeds and apricots on it. It's you know, claws and fur.
Lantana hummus is available at Kroger, Meijer, Bush's, and many other places where hummus is sold. All right, the defense. Michigan holds Air Force to its lowest rushing total since 2012. Nick Baumgartner got in fights with people on the internet complaining about the defense.
I mean, so people were getting angry that Michigan was running a three-man front. It's like, this is working! What is wrong with you? I muted a lot of people yesterday.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have anyone like complaining about the defense in my mentions. So, like, you and Baumgartner need to have like a mention off to see who has the worst.
The problem is, like, now I can't go back because I mute these people. Yeah, and then I have to do like I've probably muted like 1,500 accounts by now. It's difficult to go back and figure out who was saying the dumb thing that I need to revisit because I.
But Baumgartner is like fighting with these people.
Yeah, Baumgartner will just answer him. I'm just like, mute. I'm like, this is dumb.
He's like quote tweeted.
Anybody complaining about the defense is not worth engaging.
And on the one hand, he is doing God's work.
Oh, absolutely, because there are people out here who somehow think this, and Baumgartner is addressing them.
But
and bless him for that.
On the other hand, if I wanted to look at my mentions, I'd look at my mentions.
Yep.
I mean,
Nick is writing for an audience that is not entirely made up of other Michigan Press Corps members, yeah. So I do understand that, you know, it is nice to expose this every once in a while, but I happen to be seeing a fair amount of that already.
Yeah. You know what I like about his Twitter account? He doesn't do play-by-play. That's
always nice.
He's like the
beat writer. We're all watching the game, man.
Yeah, he's the beat writer who gets it. But anyway, there's always like one game where I'm just like, I hate Twitter, I hate Twitter, I hate Twitter, and this was kind of
this one like from the jump, really.
So one of the most interesting, but this is a Twitter thing. So one of the most interesting things on the day was a James Light tweet about a Don Brown option scheme that he had diagrammed for them at the coaching clinic.
Yes,
and that's what they ran.
Yeah,
so they inserted Kalik Hudson as like a weird third safety in the middle of the field. And his job was to have either the pitch man or the quarterback, depending on what the blocking scheme demanded of him. So he has time to run up. He has time to identify the way that they were blocking it and then get to the play. And then someone replied to him. Cause, like, people who follow James Light are mostly us and like high school football coaches.
Yeah.
And they're like, if this is the scheme Michigan runs, expect a lot of double option, by which I think he meant like power option from the NCAA series where you have the lead blocker and the fullback. And that's what they did.
Sure enough, yeah.
And in the second quarter when Michigan was kind of getting got on those drives where like Air Force was moving the ball fairly
edge
well.
Edge guy's getting picked off by a blocker on the outside all of a sudden.
And also the other scheme is like it's just because they're going to do like counter pitches, and that's also what they did. And I'm like, oh no, the scheme, it's been discovered. And then Don Brown brought some other stuff out.
Yeah, he adjusts because he is a professional.
Air Force struggles and can't do anything in the second half except for hit that one big pass.
Yep.
God, that felt good.
It was great. I mean, you know, memories of 2012 still lingered a little bit heading into this game.
Because,
you know, option offenses were just a pain in the ass to defend. And they have... It's really difficult even for an excellent defensive coordinator to adjust because all Air Force does is come up with little tweaks to the option offense to screw with whatever new defense people are trying against it.
Yeah.
And for him to shut it down to the point where Air Force doesn't even crack 250 yards and throws him into a situation where really, once they hit that long pass, they were trying to become a passing offense. I was surprised at how early they went to trying to throw to get back into the game, because they can't do it.
No.
And, I mean, they got sacked on 25% of their dropback. It was surprising that they went to it that early, because it's not like they're down three scores. They're down two scores. You can run back into it at that point. It was going to be iffy either way. I just thought they chose the option that gave them, like, no chance, because they're trying to block Michigan's defensive line.
Yeah, there was a point at the end of the first half where they had an opportunity to put a drive together, and they were, like, 3rd and 7, and they ran it. And I was like, I think that they're just not going to try to pass it at all today,
because
they've seen what happens when they try to do it. And then they got so despondent about their ground game that they were trying to hit Kalik Hudson on, like, deep shots, and Hudson did a great job.
Yes. And that was when Werthmann wasn't just under siege.
Yeah, so he had a couple of pass breakups where he's just in the chest of the defender. He's doing exactly what he should be. So that was reassuring to see after last week when there was a little bit of iffiness.
He does get beat deep on that one zone play.
So
also came up with that late gift interception.
Oh, yeah.
It's on stat sheet.
It's on stat sheet, yeah. It
was not at all relevant to the outcome of the game, but it's on there.
Well, he would have had another one, except Werthmann threw it so far behind his receiver that he couldn't grab it.
Yeah, Hudson did a one-hand stab. Bad when you throw it behind the trailing defender.
And there was a guy in my section who was like, oh, you got to catch that. I'm not going to turn around. I'm not going to look at him. I'm just going to...
Not going to engage these people.
But if he says something that dumb again, I am going to see what this person looks like. That's all I do. I just want to see what the person looks like.
You just want to scope it out.
And it doesn't matter what they look like. Of course you look like that.
Immediate confirmation bias.
Right. It's like if you pass someone in a car and they've been doing something stupid, it doesn't matter who they are.
Of course it's you.
Yeah. Just kind of like a general, like, human-wide stereotype. Yeah.
You're a human driving a car. I hate you.
Yeah. Look at you with your four limbs and your...
I actually had that on the way into the podcast today. Someone was tailgating me, like, really, really, really close.
Yeah, and it looked exactly like you expected.
Absolutely.
To.
Pulled up next to me and it was like, yeah, it's you.
We're racist against the human race.
You really are. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
It really is.
One other thing that I did think might translate to Michigan games later in the year is I thought LeVert Hill was great in run support.
I thought David Long was too. I thought both cornerbacks did an excellent job. Hill popped more.
Yeah.
But I thought both corners did a pretty darn good job. Long had a tackle for loss that was pretty impressive in there too.
Yeah, both those guys did some work. And we saw Bush get sideline to sideline a lot.
Yes.
Like, kind of our instinct going into this game is that Bush was, like, a really good linebacker to combat the triple option.
Confirmed. Yeah.
And he might just be a really good linebacker.
Period.
To confront anything.
Yeah. And he gets places.
I thought McCray had a really, really nice bounce back game.
Yes.
Like, he was dodging cut blocks and disrupting timing and being the kind of great run stopper he's supposed to be. And I think this was a game for him. But, you know, after kind of a rough week last week, it was nice to see him bounce back.
Yeah, that was encouraging.
Kind of the one minor down note is that Aubrey Solomon, when he came in for Maurice Hurst, was clearly a major downgrade.
Yeah,
he had to be a major downgrade, but, like, I would have liked it if he was less of a major downgrade.
Yeah, like, he was having trouble handling those cut blocks. He was getting chopped down a little bit. Yeah. It's like, especially, you know, relative to the rest of Michigan's defensive line, which are just like a bunch of very angry weeble wobbles, just not getting cut.
Winovich had a couple of outstanding plays.
Unbelievable. He's really coming on.
I mean, the thing about him is, like, he's, what, 260, 265, and he regularly impacts people much heavier than him and blows them up.
Yeah, that's been the part of his game that has most surprised and delighted me so far this year, is he's really strong.
he's not like an edge rusher where he just...
No, I mean, because we were kind of thinking, like, you know, Jake Ryan defensive end, and you're going to take some negative with that, where he's going to have to use speed because power isn't always an option. He's got both in the bag.
Yeah, I mean, he could be a strong side end, and that would probably be okay.
Yeah, that would work out all right.
And we don't want to move him, but he's... I think of all the people on the defense,
he's exceeding expectations.
Yeah, I mean, and he's the one who's, if you're thinking about like the most problematic spot, if Michigan's going to run a three-man line on a regular basis, you would think it would be Winovich, and it has not been that at all.
Yep, yep, yep. And then Cannell got torched on the one pass they completed.
He got beat. Like, there wasn't anybody. There wasn't help after that.
Well, I mean, can you even really blame the guy? Like, you are going to get got at least.
I mean,
once.
That's the thing against Air Force. That this is why they average like 25 yards of freaking completion. Yeah. Like they run and run and run and run, and then finally they run a slant.
Yeah. So I'll have to see exactly what happened on that, but I'm guessing that they were putting him in a situation where he really needed to beat a block
to the outside.
Yeah. And, by the time that he realized something was terribly wrong, it was too late. And I'll probably give him a minus, but I'm not going to be mad about it. It's like, yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah.
So, you know,
this is why you never schedule Air Force, among many other reasons.
Yes, never schedule Air Force. Good God.
That freaking field goal drive at the end of the first half it really set the tone when they covered 24 yards in 6 minutes. 12 plays,
yeah.
Just like, oh my goodness, this is such an Air Force drive. We're going to be into this all afternoon.
Like, Michigan goes up like 6-3, and I look up at the clock, and there's 2 seconds left in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that game moves so fast.
Well,
especially it was in, well,
it tried to
move fast. Aside from a certain aspect of it, but still, compared to the Cincinnati game, this was moving at light speed.
But I mean, just kind of go back to our overall Don Brown feels. Like,
still good.
I mean, this is a defense that had to prepare for a triple option offense and did a stellar job at it. And they didn't just do it by being bigger and stronger. They did it by being good tactically.
Yeah. And this was Air Force was coming off a bye week, too. They had an extra week to prepare for Michigan's defense.
That is a good point. And they played VMI in their opener. So they probably had the entire offseason
to prepare for this game.
To kitchen sink. And Michigan stood up to it. And they only really gave up like the one. Well, there were a couple of sweeps that they managed to get. That's right. So
yeah, but see, even then, you know, if Air Force doesn't get a run, and they have one run longer than 30 yards, and if Air Force doesn't get multiple runs like that,
yeah,
you're beating them, most likely.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that did bug me a little bit in the second half is that you had Hudson lining up inside of a tight end, and they would pitch it outside, and then Hudson would get trapped inside. And some of that is probably on Hudson, but some of it is just like you've given him a really tough job.
Yeah.
And you didn't really adjust after the first one. So there were like two or three of those that kind of grated a little bit, like live.
Yeah.
Because I'm still panicking about the fact we might lose this game.
Yeah. But then when you go, you kind of just go out and look at the box score all of a sudden, especially if you take out that 64-yard pass. I think Nick did the math and Air Force averaged like 2.9 yards a play or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
That's not much. I mean, even with that in there, they only average 4 yards a play, and this is a team that is designed to be efficient.
Yes, sir. So I think we're about on par for what we expected this defense to be, at least after 2 weeks of the season. Like, I think it's better than we thought going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, there's still we still need more data on the secondary,
yeah,
because they have not faced a dynamic passing offense by any stretch.
They seem pretty good at run support.
They do.
We can say that, I think, with some confidence after this game. So I think we're on pace here, and hopefully the offense can get up to a point where the defense can carry them to victories.
Indeed.
All right, we're going to take one more break. Come back, talk about special teams, and I have some feelings ball for you.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage, and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9!
Colby, what about you?
7!
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Thank you for being brave.
Oh, yeah.
Traveled down the road and back again.
Hey, so we started from the bottom, now we're here, girl. Oh, yeah. This is my butt right here.
Special teams, there was a lot of it.
Yeah, there was. A little bit more than I think most of us wanted, at least in one specific aspect.
Well, almost all of it went very, very well, though. So, Quinn Nordine is 5 of 5 on field goals. He has pretty much already established himself as the best kicker in Michigan history three games into his career.
I'll be honest, I was pretty happy that Michigan ran a play to set up his end-of-half field goal. Because it was going to be from outside of 50, and I don't want the Wild Thing haircut. So I was really happy that that ended up being from 49, because I was going to be really nervous in the second half otherwise. And he had extra leg on that one, too. That hit, like, halfway up the net, and it was not, like, a pop-up shot. That thing was flying low.
I'd forgotten about that bet that I didn't bet anything about. So.
Yeah, this is really a lopsided. I don't like how this is set up.
With two field goals of 50-plus yards, I mean, that's not going to happen again. Because they get to the red zone, right? And then
yeah, I mean, they're going to have to both be end-of-half field goals probably, but yeah. I'm still nervous.
Come on, we'll get chicks.
mad chicks.
Yeah, everybody's still up on, you know, those 80s baseball movies, right?
Well, and Charlie Sheen is a popular...
A hot commodity.
Yeah, anyway. Donovan Peoples-Jones a good punt return that was a touchdown, and I enjoyed the punter's just panic when this guy was coming at him.
Yeah, he actually got a pretty good grab in. I don't know how Peoples-Jones stayed in. Yeah, I still don't know how Peoples-Jones stayed in bounds. That was absurd.
He's strong.
Yeah, I guess so, with K. But, man, you could tell from, like, really as soon as that punt got off and you saw how far he had outkicked his coverage.
Yeah.
It was like, this comeback.
Don't use that phrase.
I'm sorry. I know.
That phrase is banned.
That phrase should be banned. It's just, what is the other?
It's a literal thing that happened.
I know. He did it.
So one thing that I thought was to his advantage in this game is that we, again, faced a punter with a huge leg. So all he had to do was, like, run downfield and grab balls and not have to worry about gunners or any of that stuff.
I mean, we did have one. He did have, like, a short, high shank that Peoples-Jones was, like, very intent on running up and pointing to and clearing everybody out.
And like, a couple of the gunners had obviously been chewed out.
Yes. Everybody was hyper aware of the short punt in this game.
So, and then he did fair catch the things he should fair catch. Mm-hmm. Jim Harbaugh said that he's not someone who repeats mistakes, and so far so good in that department.
Yeah.
So I...
It was funny to see people swing from, like, why is Donovan Peoples-Jones out there last week? And now it's like, well, why isn't he returning kickoffs too? Which was a question in the press conference that Jim Harbaugh was like, he's a freshman, man. One week at a time here.
Okay, but seriously.
But let's put him on kickoff returns, because Crawford's not doing much back there.
No, like, Crawford had a couple opportunities to, like, make a guy miss, and he just gets tackled, and he's not Donovan Peoples-Jones. And, like, come on.
Yeah.
If he can do punts, he can do kickoffs. Like, what's the hard part about a kickoff?
But it was funny to see a couple of the same handles that were like, get this guy out of here last week. Like, make him do everything. Give him the ball all the time. Yeah. Put him on defense.
There was definitely a guy in my section last week who was like, whoa, what is this youngin' doing? Rah.
And then was super excited about the punt return, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, this was Cincinnati. I don't know. I don't know if he returned.
You get like the turnover in your section.
Well, it's mostly turnover in front of me, and then in back of me, it is kind of a lot of turnover too. I hope that horrible family that just sits on their phones all day never comes back. But they probably will. I think there's a horrible family that like sells all their tickets except like Ohio State, and then they show up for Ohio State, and the kids look at their phones and they're like doing Instagram. And that infuriates me because not only are these little brats not paying attention to the game, but they have reception.
Yep.
What?
What network are you on, children?
What kind of like American Express Platinum Black phones are you freaking? Anyway,
you've done this rant on the podcast before, haven't you? Like this is ringing some bells.
Yes, I have. I have. And they look exactly like I expect them to look.
Well, I feel like we've got some... This is a good transition into the feelings ball portion of this game. Wait. Oh, we have more special teams.
We have more special teams. One, shank number three from Will Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of start wondering how many of those he's got left before Brad Robbins gets a run.
Yeah, Harbaugh was saying something about how they're like trying some directional things and that might be throwing him off, but that's three shank punts. Yeah. Like, I'm starting to think it might be a Will Hart problem, not a directional punt problem.
And Foog. What's Foog's first name? Foog?
James Foog. He's booming him,
and he was like taunting the Air Force returners. He was like arcing them so high and having them like hit at the 1 yard line that like he's clearly like, come on, you can do it. You can take this one out. And they're like, no, we're smart.
Run into the angry freshman.
And then he put one at like the 1 yard line, and that ended up at the 15.
Yeah.
So I think Michigan is clearly knows that they can get as many touchbacks as they want with this Foog guy.
Yeah.
And they're just and
now they're just seeing if they can like get 10 yards of field possession back by popping them up a little bit.
So impact kicker on kickoffs is the thing.
Who's different from the other impact kicker? If Robbins breaks through, man.
Yeah, the kicking situation all of a sudden looks like really good for 4 years, which would be awesome.
That'd be comforting.
Okay, feelings ball.
Get the man in red off the damn field.
Seriously, so. Beginning of the fourth quarter, there's an ad break because at the end of the third quarter is always an ad break. Michigan runs one play, and then there's a timeout, and there's another ad break. And I'm like,
Yeah.
And then I said I was going to boycott college football advertisers, and then I spent the rest of the day watching college football, and I realized I cannot boycott 60% of the American economy.
Yeah, it becomes impossible.
But I can boycott one thing, and I'm going to boycott Dr. Pepper. I'm a Mr. Pibb man.
Yeah.
From now on.
I mean, fuck Larry Culpepper, so...
But like, seriously, I'm going to pick the one thing. I'm going to pick, like, one advertiser for college football. I'm going to be like, okay, it's too much. There's too many ads. There's too many ad breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can put up with two ad breaks a quarter.
I feel like Nissan's the big culprit here, but it's tough to boycott. Like, I wasn't going to buy a car, so.
Yes, you were. You were
going
to buy a Nissan.
I was going to buy a car, and now I'm not buying a Nissan.
You're not buying a Nissan.
I'm doing something else.
You're buying, I guess, a Fiat, since it's the only company that doesn't advertise their golf
course. Good job, Fiat.
An Opel.
I don't even know what that is.
I think there's some sort of Chinese brand of car that you could purchase in China and ship overseas.
Do they still make, like, Geo Prisms?
No.
No.
They don't. They don't.
Because that explains the lack of advertisements.
Has that been something that's been bothering you for a long time?
No, I was just trying to think of cars that don't advertise on college football. It's tough. There's a lot of them.
Saturn and Oldsmobile also don't advertise. You can't get a Model T.
I'll start poking around.
Tesla. Tesla doesn't advertise on college football.
There it is. That one's in my price range.
Everybody,
for sure.
Everybody buy a Tesla. But it's just... And the thing that really gets to me is... These interminable, intolerable commercial breaks are all in the service of paying not the players on the field.
Yeah, it's bothersome. And also, the NFL has figured this out.
Have
largely.
They?
Like, they have a lot of games ending in about 3 hours. And their halftime is 5 minutes shorter because they did that because they don't have marching bands.
Yeah.
They'll still do the commercial kickoff commercial thing, but...
Yeah.
However they've got it set up, they are getting through games a lot faster than college football, and I have to think it's the advertising time.
Yeah, I mean...
Because there's no other difference.
I mean, if you want to, like... Well, no, there are. There are timing differences and stuff.
Yeah, some of it, but...
So they do run fewer plays, but the ability to get under 3 hours for an NFL game is about the ability to get under 3.5 hours for a college game.
Yeah, and I was like... I mean, that first quarter ended so quick that I was like, I might be able to walk home and catch, like, the 3:30 kickoff.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
I got home and it was 10 minutes into the Minnesota game that followed Michigan, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you got to do live reads, if you got to have people be like, this game brought to you with limited commercial interruption from your new favorite company.
Yeah, and we've
Because that would be my new favorite company.
Yes, it would be. And we've seen, like, for broadcasts where they'll do the, like, throw on a bottom line, have a little thing slide in from the side, and show a sponsor while the play is going on. That's fine.
Yeah, there's like
there's so much. Soccer figured it out. Soccer doesn't have commercials. The clock runs.
Yeah,
there's a game going on. That's what we're here to see.
Yes, sir.
And there's just advertisements all around the field. That's fine as long as I can watch a game straight through.
I'm really sad that Kevin Sumlin's going to get fired because yes, sir is such a wonderful term. It's just a good But he's done.
Yeah, he's this goose is coached.
He can coach at Purdue after Jeff Brown gets hired by three different SEC teams.
And UCLA.
So it really kind of gets to you when it's the third quarter and you're hot and you're just like, come on, let's go. And there's yet another TV timeout after a 3-and-out, and you're just like, who is this for? Like, who is making this money? And it's not the people on the field.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't necessarily get at them. Like, I think as an advertiser, you'd probably prefer to have in-game ads versus the commercial breaks too, because there's enough college football on at noon where if there's a commercial break, I'm changing the channel.
Yes, sir. I
and at best, if it's a Michigan game, I'm muting the TV.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do now.
Yeah.
Like,
so, like, people have figured out how, like, to not pay attention to commercials anymore, so the networks need to figure out something else, because this is getting ridiculous with these four-hour-long games.
It is.
And regulation.
You can take a timeout between quarters. You can do everything before and after the game, and I will accept 2 timeouts per quarter, and that's it.
Yeah.
And until then, I'm a Mr. Pibb man.
Yep.
Although if you bring Pitbull back, I'll find someone else to boycott.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender along with Brian Cook, and I would like to personally thank the CBS director of the Florida Tennessee game who chose to cut so many times to Butch Jones looking like he was trying to shit out his internal organs.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
And until then, I'm a Mr. Pibman.